It's Arnold Palmer Invitational Week, and Callaway took a tour through the King's office at Bay Hill, showed some incredible memorabilia, including Arnie's handwritten Masters yardage book. Check out the full video for yourself at facebook.com/Callaway. Let's go.
Be the right club.
Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast. I'm Chris Solomon, joined by a two-time winner of the Arnold Palmer Invitational, which is this week, obviously starting this Thursday, Matt Every. Matt, thanks for joining us. What's going on, man?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Nothing, man. I'm excited. My first and only interview of the week.
You had no interview requests after winning this event twice.
You're scared of me. And then the others just don't want to have my poor play. So I kind of slide right by them.
So what is the vibe down there like this week? I mean, obviously you've had an incredible history there, and you've had a lot of struggles with your play recently. Does going back to a place like Bay Hill bring back those memories and kind of give you some kind of boost of confidence going into the week?
Yeah, you know, I'm searching for whatever or whatever. It's always a good vibe rolling into the parking lot here. I do have a lot of good memories here. As far as my game, it's pretty weird. It's good on the range, and then I get to the course, and I kind of just I don't know what happens. Sometimes I lock up over it. Sometimes things are going decent for like four or five holes, and then you know something bad happens, and I've tried to keep a good attitude through it all, because I know, you know, career isn't 1 year, and you know, I know there's going to be a light at the end of the tunnel, and I don't really give a crap about making cuts. I want to win out here. I know I can, and you know, having two win, you know, the list of guys have two wins to three wins, you know, that's a big deal, having three wins in the PGA Tour. So that's kind of my goal, is just to get another win.
So it doesn't bother you as much to miss a cut as maybe some of your peers, you think?
I could give a fuck about some cuts. Seriously, it happens. I'm not playing to make cuts. It's part of the game, man. I'm not out here to try and finish 30th every week, you know?
I was wondering you've made, at least on the tour, on the course alone, almost $9 million in your career. You've missed several cuts in a row going into this week. Obviously the tour players have plenty of sponsorship money. Does anything change from you, like from a financial perspective, when you aren't making actual money? Is there any, like, do you feel like pressure you should be making money for your caddy or anything like that? Does anything change in that regard?
That's a really good question. Right now, no. How do I say this without sounding?
No, it's fine. You could say you have a lot of money. You're a tour player.
I don't have a lot of money, but I also don't need to look at my bank account.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
I hate money. Ever since I was a kid, I just don't like I don't like talking about it. Whatever. Yes, I do feel. And you know, I have kids, and I do feel pressure to make money for my caddy because he's a friend, you know, and I know he's out there trying hard, but it's not, my life has not changed because of my recent struggles. No.
I mean, when you won for the first time, there was a huge amount of emotion that came from you in your interview, and I think it's pretty easy to kind of piece together for somebody watching that how much kind of goes into that win, right, and getting all the way to the top. What changed for you just in general in your outlook on golf life or anything after winning for the first time?
Well, it's definitely the highest I've ever been in my life after I won. And you know, I was completely sober, you know. So it was a very weird, it had, you know, it has the most substance ever, winning. It can become addictive, and you almost kind of, after that, I don't know if my expectations changed for myself, and I was like, fuck, you know, I gotta do this again. This is awesome, you know, or what, but I might have started trying to a little too hard after I won. You know, before I won the first time, I was playing really well going into Bay Hill. I felt like I had a few good looks to win on the West Coast. Then we rolled into Florida, and I think I played decent at either Honda or Tampa. And then, you know, Bay Hill rolled around, and I just had a feeling. I knew I was going to be there. You know, nobody can say I knew I was going to win that week.
Right.
Unless you're Tiger, you know. But, I mean, it just, I knew I was going to be around it. And then the next year, and then I kind of struggled after that. After the first win, it's kind of when my struggle started. And then I randomly won the next year. I was playing terrible going into 2015. Yeah. Terrible. And I don't know what happened. It just worked out. And then I really haven't played good since that. I mean, maybe it's expectations, you know.
And so let's go back. Going back to 2014, like, it puts you, this win just puts you in a whole different kind of category. Yeah. As far as, you know, you're going to be playing the majors for sure now. You're getting into Augusta. You're, yeah. That first time at Augusta, what was that experience? What about that experience was kind of maybe surprising to you? Something you weren't expecting, or something that just kind of stuck out to you? Like, was there really that much of a different environment when you teed up for the first time in the Masters?
Well, the timing of my win, I only had 2 weeks
right
before Augusta, so I don't think I played the next week. So, you know, going into it, my last tournament I'd won, and, you know, I believe in myself. I still believe in myself. I believed in myself a lot more in 2014. I mean, I was rolling, you know. I was like, dude, Masters, you know, I'm gonna give this a go. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And there's a lot more that goes in, you know, for me, when I qualified 2 weeks before, I'm scrambling for houses. I got all my friends asking me for tickets, extended family asking me for tickets. There was a lot, you know, it was a relief when the tournament started, put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And if I get into the Masters again, which I hope I do, I swear to God, I'm going up by myself on Tuesday, you know? I'm serious. Dude.
Too much of a circus?
It is. There's too much. It's a beautiful place. Any week I've ever played good, I've never been like, oh man, you know, I played good this week because Tuesday I had a really good practice round, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's never been that way. So you get to Augusta and you start playing all these holes and everyone's telling you, oh, you can't miss here, and you're getting all these practice putts and the greens, and that shit's all out the window once the tournament starts. I mean, you'd almost completely forget it, you know? It was different. I think I went up Saturday before, and like I said, I'd go Tuesday now.
Yeah, that's a long time, especially, and that's kind of it. Did you, I imagine that's not like you would approach any other tournament, so you get a little bit out of your routine going with that route?
No, I mean, it's a miracle if I play an 18-hole practice round. It's like 9 holes. That's it.
Are you a golf nut? Like, do you love the game of golf?
I used to.
Yeah.
I don't anymore. I used to love, like, the personalities in golf when I was growing up. I was a sports fan growing up. But I played golf, so I followed golf too, and just I feel like there were more characters, and now it's like Now to me, it seems like everyone, I'm 33, I feel like everybody younger than me pretty much played once off growing up, and that's it. That's on the PGA Tour. None of that's a bad thing. I'm just, you know, it's just kind of how I think of it right now.
A little bit more robotic and...
It is, yeah, TrackMan, you know.
You're not a TrackMan guy?
I mean, I've used it. It's probably made me worse. I was telling someone the other day that I feel like TrackMan... you can't see my hands. But if TrackMan, I feel like, has brought... So if you put, like, the best... And you could probably throw Dustin out the window in this because he's just a freak. But you put athletes up here and guys who have only played golf down here, and I feel like TrackMan brings them right in the middle. You know, it just brings the guys who are naturals down and brings the guys who are dorks and nerds and brings them up to the middle.
Interesting. Because I feel like, back to what you're saying just about, you know, the younger guys coming out and a little bit less personality, I feel like golf, the way the media treats it, kind of the way the media treats any story, anything that's
you have to be careful.
Yeah, that's my point, is everything that's even remotely outside the lines, or, you know, if the, you know, people get upset and say, oh, that's such a boring interview, take it one shot at a time and whatnot. But if you don't fall in line with that, you're making headlines on every website. So, Do you think that's
that's very fair. Very fair. Very fair point. And you have, you're not only answering for yourself, you're answering for your sponsors too,
right?
So, I mean, you know, I can't, I mean, I'll say what I want and whatever. I'm not that big a deal, but I understand if, you know, Justin Thomas can't say what he really wants to. I get that, you know, or, you know, Daniel Berger or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, how cool would it be if we didn't have to answer it any?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, right? I mean, everyone, the sponsorship, money flows.
It is, but I just, I don't know. Somebody's going to do it. That's voice is wants to be heard, you know? Like, my favorite musician is Noel Gallagher, and he gives the best interviews ever because he literally... he does not care what people think about him, you know? Says whatever he wants.
I feel like you kind of feel the same way.
Well, I do, yes. I'm not a rock star.
That's fair, but I could already like sense you kind of balancing the line here of, you know, you want to say things, but, and you're probably one of the more uncensored guys out there, but you're at the same time, you have some things in mind like, okay, if I say that, this is gonna really make some people upset.
I mean, when we were at dinner the other night and I was telling my agent, I was like, yeah, get me on this. I was like, I'm gonna roast some people on here. But yeah, no, there's, you know, I have to see these people. Not that I'm scared of them, but I mean, I just, you know, awkwardness and stuff like that, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, back to the line with what you're saying, just kind of the guys coming out being a bit robotic. I feel like when we do have anybody that kind of breaks the mold in a certain way that we don't see to our liking, they get kind of lambasted on yeah. Just it happens on social media.
Let me talk about this social media stuff.
All right.
So... yeah, if somebody comes out and says something, you know, that they're not, you know, PC or whatever, you get hammered, right? Or I remember when I was coming out of school, I was cocky and arrogant, and I'm not at all. Like, I get along with everybody. I really do. And if you don't get along with me, something's wrong with you. That's the way I think. And I don't mean that in a cocky way, you know, or an arrogant way. I give anybody the time of day. But to label someone for speaking their mind, but then you got guys on Twitter who retweet nice things about them. That to me is like that's narcissism.
Yeah.
I mean, it's disgusting. And nobody calls anybody out over it. You know, it's like, wait, you're saying, hey, you're patting yourself on the back, you know?
So it sounds like you're on social media more than you claim you are, though.
No, I used to have a Twitter. and my agent made me get off of it because I'd start firing back at people, and it got me in trouble.
The worst is that there's now like the daily fantasy sports guys that will, if you mess up their lineup, like you personally, they'll be all over you. You will be receiving messages. Like,
yeah, well, I do that in fantasy football, and then I was just straight up.
Maybe
why'd you drop that pass?
Maybe it is better that you don't have a Twitter account.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah. Definitely don't do that. Fantasy golf, straight degenerate.
Back in again with what you're saying about guys being different, somebody like Bryson DeChambeau that's come out, I feel like he's really ruffled a lot of feathers on tour, just kind of this his entire approach, you know, towards making sure that everyone knows how scientific he is and whatnot. Is that something that's talked about on tour? Like, are guys as upset with it as it seems like to me?
Okay. He does not ruffle my feathers at all. And he said hi to me. This with me. So I'm all right with Bryson. I don't agree with how his whole putter thing was handled, where they kind of like told him it was okay, and then they just went up and said, hey, actually it's not okay. He is different, and it's okay, you know, like he's fine with me. If he wants people to know he's a scientist, and he is a scientist, great, you know, better than a dork wanting everyone to know think he's cool.
Is there any guys on tour that you've kind of like, older guys on tour that you kind of have gravitated towards in the past, maybe that fit the mold more what you're saying, and the less robotic and more freewheeling guys?
Yeah, so my favorite golfer growing up was Mark Calcavecchia. I just liked the way he played, dude. I mean, just swung hard and hit this big old cut, and I just liked everything about him. If we're going older, so we're just saying just older than me, Tom Gillis, I really like. And then the people, you know, the guys that I roll with out here, like Steve Marino, Will McKenzie is great. Spencer Levine off the course is great.
Why just off the course there? Why just off the course for Spencer Levine?
Yeah, it's a little intense. I get along with everyone, man. I really do. The older, like my age and up, it's a little easier to get along with. I always, another thing about the young guys out here, I find it funny. I was in the locker room today talking with another guy. You see these guys that are like, you know, 20 to 25, and they're wearing metal spikes. And it's like, I'm 33, and I started golf early, and I barely had a pair of metal spike shoes. That's kind of funny to me. I just don't see the point in it. It's just trying too hard.
A quick break to talk to you guys about the new Epic driver from Callaway. You've already heard a lot about it. You've heard me talk about it. I actually played it for the first time today. My playing partner and I were laughing out loud, actually, at some of the tee shots I was hitting with this thing. It looks like the ball should kind of stop rising and start heading towards the earth, and it just kept going higher and higher. I hit one about 340 yards. It was downwind, downhill, but anyways. At sea level today, and I'm absolutely amped about this thing. Find out more about this thing, callawaygolf.com/epic. There's a reason why everyone is saying the things that they are about this golf club. It is totally legit. So back to the interview now with Matt Every. So let's say if you're in charge of the tour, like tomorrow, what are some of the first changes you're making?
Oh my God, this is the best question ever. A bunch. One. No, if you're going to wear glasses, wear them on your fucking face. Not your hat.
That's the biggest pressing issue for you?
It just bothers me. I mean, it's like an accessory, you know? We're accessorizing out here now. You'd probably do something with pace of play out here. I'm not sure how, but it needs to be a little faster.
but not before we get the glasses thing figured out.
Yeah, that's got to go first.
Okay.
That's got to go. What else do we got? There's a lot. Just give me a sec. Yeah, metal spikes, got to go.
Out. Do they mess up the greens as much as, does it have an effect on the greens? Like, can you tell when you're playing with a guy that has metal spikes?
Yeah, you can. Okay. Oh, the difference in the market makes is very different.
Yeah.
What else? We got, New Balance golf shoes. Gotta go.
Who wears those?
Exactly. I've seen some commercials and I've seen them on people and they're not for me. What else we got? You asked me what I changed. You can't judge me for this.
I'm not judging at all. I'm excited about all these. Are we okay with Skechers though?
Oh no, that's actually the ones I was talking about, I think.
Okay, Skechers got to go then.
Well, both. I mean, to me, you should wear only all white golf shoes. They go with everything and they look good. What else do we got? The whining has to go. You know, there's nothing wrong with a little rage, but let it out and then that's it, you know?
It doesn't sound like these are very
fines.
These aren't really okay. Fines. That's a good one. I was gonna say these aren't necessarily rules based as much as there's just things you want to just change about other people. I'm fine with that.
Change things I want to change about the tour.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Fines. How many times have you been fined?
Well, I've appealed a lot of them, but I've been fined a lot.
Did you win any of the appeals?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of they're very broad. I mean, conduct unbecoming is a very broad term. And you know, most of mine have come from, you know, if like a volunteer sees me chuck a club or something, I get, you know, I don't know if they'd instruct the volunteers at the start of the week to tell on people or what, but it's only unless they got cameras. Not seeing it, you know, and you know, they're not allowed to talk about fines for sure, but I always, whenever I get fined and then I see someone on TV, you know, throw a club, I'm like, hey, you guys find this guy for this, and I'm like, yeah, you know, you're not fine me for this, two people saw it, the whole world saw that, just kind of stuff like that. I've gotten out of probably half of them.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Is it? Do you wish that they were just had an open policy about the when they fine people and suspend people or anything like that?
I do. No. Suspensions, no. fines, yes.
Okay. Two separate categories there.
Two totally separate categories.
Is that all the things you changed, or are there more?
There's probably more, and if we're talking, okay. I think of them, I'll let you know.
So I like to make light of the fact that on whenever somebody comes on the broadcast for the first time that day or anything, the announcers tend to not go past like the first sheet of information on the guy. Like when you see Sam Saunders on the screen, they're going to mention that he's Arnold Palmer's grandson. So what are the top items on your for whenever anybody is talking about you? Like the three things, two or three things that are always the first that get mentioned.
You know, Matt Every, University of Florida. Or, you know, or they'll go to Bay Hill. But, dude, I haven't been on TV much lately. I don't know.
Well, not it doesn't even have to be TV. It's like the narratives. What are the favorite narratives that people like to say about you?
Well, TV or just people? Like, people. Just, TV would be just, I mean, if you just looked at, it would be University of Florida and four-time All-American. You know, whatever. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm like a pretty boring person.
So
I'm not, but on paper I am.
Getting into a little more details, you touched on it very briefly earlier, just on your struggles, how you said, you know, when you're on the practice range, it's all there, and when you take it to the course, it's not really there. Does the same go for when you're playing practice rounds at home when you're not in an event?
Yes, it does. It's a little weird. I'll be on my home course, and I'll just it'll be good, 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 and then I'll hit a foul ball. And I'm like, you can't play. It's borderline. The last year and a half, it's been borderline driver yips. I don't know if I want to call it that, but it's close. And it's not even close to which one I'd rather. Like, I'd rather have putting yips every day of the week than driver yips.
Quick audio cutout.
Yeah, so if I had to choose, you know, driver, you know, I've played with a guy who had the putting yips when I had the driver yips, and he beat me by 8 shots, you know, and it's, you just can't compete when you're not in play.
You had mentioned, I think it was around this time last year, that you were having issues where you're kind of somewhat blacking out over the ball. Does that something that still, yeah, that still happens to you?
A little bit. It's not, I'd probably explain that poorly. It's not a complete blackout. I faint. But my body just seizes up and I forget what I'm doing. And it's the weirdest thing ever. I've gone and got hypnotized. I've tried everything, dude. And it's just, I just got to dig it out, man. It'll come sooner or later. I just need one round to get me going. This is the kind of person I am, you know, and then I'll be off and running again.
And that's what I was going to ask next is, are you willing to try, like, you know, anything, changing coaching, changing, you know, sports psychologist, anything? You've done it all?
Yeah, done it all. It's my fault. I mean, it's not at all. Comes back down to me and the choices that I've made where I'm at now. I would never blame coach for anything. You know, I'm the one that seeks their advice. It's not like they come to me and put a gun in my head and said, you have to let me coach you, you know? So I've learned a ton. I almost think I've learned too much.
too much information.
Yeah, I wish I could forget a lot of stuff that I know about the golf swing. I feel like I'd be better, but I can't.
So what is, when you're about to hit a shot, what are your swing thoughts? I know that can vary for a person, depending on,
week,
you know,
to even, week.
Yeah, week to week. Like for me, I try to think like 2 to 3 things, and like I've talked to some guys that think about like 10 different things when they swing. So like right now, when you're swinging, what are you thinking?
Like today, all I thought about was keeping pressure in my left foot the whole swing on the whole way, and that was it. I'm to the point where I can't have 3 swing thoughts. There's just, I wouldn't be able to swing, you know.
Yeah.
So one is enough, and I just stick to it and try and commit to it as much as I can, and go from there.
In talking, I spoke just with another player today, and kind of asked him, who I think knows you pretty well, and I just asked him what I should ask you about anything in particular, and he described you as one of a more misunderstood guys on tour. Why would you say? Well, first of all, how would you classify that, and why do you think a tour peer might say that about you?
I don't know. I don't know if I come off as unapproachable. Maybe. Or what it is. I have a lot of really good friends out here. And maybe the ones that don't, you know, if you're judging a book by its cover, maybe. I don't know.
You're just more of a. I feel like you're just kind of a straight shooter, and that can kind of come off as in this kind of environment on the course. I don't know if aloof is the right word or whatnot. Is there anything to that, or is it something you feel like you experience out on tour? Or you feel like for the most part people are very cool with you.
No, I feel like people are very cool with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. For cool. Sure. And if they're not, fuck them, you know?
I could subscribe to that. All right, there's a real strong internet movement right now to rid the game of white belts, but I didn't hear that in your list of things.
No, that's on there. That's on there.
Okay, but when you won in 2014, 3 years ago, that was cool, but when you won in 2014, you had a white belt on. That's all I'm saying.
I wore a white belt in that picture?
I'm pretty sure. I was watching the clips earlier, and I think so. Or when did the white belt officially die? Maybe a better question.
All right. Well, first of all, I've never been into white belts. You probably will find a picture of me wearing one, but for some reason, my outfits used to get scripted, and the people's clothes I wore, I hated when they threw white belts on there. I mean, they throw orange belts on there and shit, and that's not me. Like, it's not me at all. But I'm all for it. I do not own a white belt now. I wear a black belt every day, and I wear white shoes every day, and a white hat every day. Yeah. And white belt can go decent with some things, but God, I've seen it misused out here so bad sometimes.
Where would you rank your club throwing abilities compared to the rest of the tour?
Number one. It's not even close.
What's the best let go of a just absolute throw you've had in an event?
I've had a bunch. I've launched a few. I got a couple over the cliff on 6 at Pebble on the right.
A couple?
Canyon at, oh yeah, a couple. I got some in the canyon on, I had one, I don't know, it was either last year. It was last year at Torrey. Not like a year and a month ago or whatever. I hit one right on 14, and then I don't even know where I hit the next shot, but I threw where I was playing with. I threw my club over their head into the canyon on the other side.
Did they just duck for cover?
It cleared them by a ton.
By a mile.
Yeah, no, I love just aggression. And then it's fine. And then I'll go talk to that person. It's out.
Then you're good. So who's a guy that you play with out there ever that it just feels their game feels the most different than everyone else? Any kind of aspect, like this guy drives the ball better than anyone I've ever seen. What skill of one player sticks out to you the most of a guy you've played with?
Well, if I was going, if I was a golf fan and I was going to the range to watch someone, I would watch Henrik Stenson. Yeah. Balls. His sound is just—it's just totally different than anybody else's. It sounds like a rocket,
and that goes for all the way through the bag, not just the 3-iron, 3-wood, right?
He's a machine. Yeah, no. I mean, he's like a machine, but he doesn't have a machine-looking swing, you know?
Yeah, he's an absolute freak. What's a favorite major that you've played in? I think you played in all 8 in 2014 and 15, right? Well, what event sticks out the most of all those 8?
Probably both British Opens. Just the vibe over there. It's just real, man. First one I played in, I was paired with Harris English, and he's a Georgia boy. And before I played in the majors, probably would have said the Masters is going to be my favorite. And I remember walking to the first tee with him, and we were both like, man, this is way cooler than any other major. Little kids know your name over there. It's weird. Little kids over here don't know who I am. Even this week, they don't know who I am, and that's fine. They shouldn't. But over there, they know your name. It's crazy. It feels so much more authentic over there.
Looking towards this week, obviously with you winning here twice, what about? And I'm sure this is a question you get a lot, but what is it about this golf course in particular that really fits your eye?
I don't know. I think some holes it kind of forces my hand off the tee to lay back and no laying up to lay back on the tee. And, when I'm playing good, my irons are usually my strength. So, and it's definitely a second shot golf course, this place. So the fairways are wide. So maybe just giving myself a lot, it gives me a lot of opportunities to hit my irons where, when I'm struggling, I don't ever get to hit out of the fairway. So I get to be out of the fairway a little more here.
So what if someone asks for like your go-to good story, what's the first one you're going for?
Well, I have a couple. One involves Chris DeMarco. The other involves Pat Perez and Jeff Overton. That's probably my best one, though.
We got time for both. Don't you worry.
All right, good. So we're playing the Barclays at Liberty National one year. And Pat has this image of a hard ass out here, and he couldn't be further from it. He's extremely soft. He's a great guy, but he's very soft. And he was, I forget what he was saying, Overton's name got brought up, and he was just, I don't know if he was whining about him or whatever. I don't know if Jeff was annoying him or what. Well, I had just got a new phone number, and sitting at the bar with Martin Flores at that Hyatt in Jersey on the water, and I go, I said let's fucking Perez, so because he didn't have my number yet, and so I text him and I said, hey man, it's Jeff. This is Monday night. I said, hey man, it's Jeff. Practice round with you tomorrow. And Pat goes, oh sorry, I've got four. You know, maybe another time, something like that. I said, oh man, come on. You know, I really wanted to play with you tomorrow. He goes, all right, fine. Teeing off at 9:30. I'll see you out there. All right, thanks, man. All right, whatever. So I go out there early. I play nine holes, and I'm walking up the ninth hole, and down number one is Overton is coming. This is at like 9 o'clock. Down number one, Overton's playing with Mickelson. Okay, so I get done with nine. I walk onto the putting green, and Pat is on the putting green, and he beelines over towards me, and he goes, "You're not gonna believe this fucking guy." He asked to fucking play with me today, and then I see him, and he just walks right by me and goes to the first tee and plays with Phil. Now I was like, "No way!" I was like, "That's terrible." I'm sitting there with Flores again, and I tell him about everything that went down. And I text Pat and I go, hey man, sorry I bailed on you today. You know, Phil asked me to play, and I just can't pass up playing with Phil. And it's something about, you know, Phil's got a lot of experience. And Pat goes, fuck you, I got experience. And I was like, yeah, but not like Phil. You know? And he was getting riled up. And then I go, hey man, I'm thinking about moving out to Scottsdale. Do you care if I come and stay at your place while I'm looking for houses for a couple days? And he goes, yeah, that's fine, just let me know when. And I was like, oh my god, what a softie. So Thursday, there's another hotel in the city, and you could take a ferry to it. There was a ferry that ran to Liberty. Well, this could have gone on forever, but fucking Overton and Perez get on the same ferry.
Oh. Okay,
on the way over. And Overton, Perez goes up, goes, can't believe you bailed on me yesterday. And he's like, what are you talking about? And then and then Jeff had already had my number, and he pulled out his phone and typed in the number, and it was mine. And he figured it out then.
Peace
yeah,
it out.
No, it was pretty good.
Ah, that's a damn good one. That's a damn good one.
Yeah.
So who
you want the DeMarco one?
Oh yeah, of course, yeah.
All right. So we were, this is at Disney, a while ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and Chris is a huge Gator fan, like he's like the stereotypical Gator fan, you know, and I went there, I like him, I'm not losing sleep if they lose, you know. We were struggling, the Gators were struggling, and we're playing, and I'm like, hey man, we're gonna lose this week, and we're playing Louisiana Lafayette. He's like, we're not gonna lose. I'll bet you whatever you want. I'm like, all right, fine. You got to give me some odds. He goes, I'll give you 101 odds, only if you do it for 100. Thinking he's gonna peel a quick 100 off of me, you know. And I'm like, yeah, I'll do it, no problem. So we agree to it. Saturday rolls around, and I see him. see him in the locker room, and he goes, "Hey, how about 50-1? I'm like, "Fine, 50-1, it's fine." So we're getting ready. We're out playing, and I look at my phone, and we're losing, all right? And it's deep into the third quarter, and I think we were down by, like, 2 scores. And the guy, I told the guys I was playing with about the bet, and they're like, "You think Chris is looking?" I was like, "I guarantee you." So right when I said that, I look at my phone, and there's a text from him that says, "No bet, can't concentrate." I'm like, "I'm never betting with you again. Telling everyone about this."
What was the final of that game?
Oh, dude, we blocked a punt with like a minute to go to score and scored a touchdown on a blocked punt to win by like 2 points. So he ended up costing himself $100, but went down. Wasn't great.
You can't bail on a bet like that. That deserves to be out there in the public like that. So
it does. It does.
So, all right, Matt, I'm going to let you go on that, man. Those are excellent stories, and I appreciate you taking a big piece of your time this week, and best of luck at Bay Hill. I know it's a special place to you, and best of luck getting your game back on track. I think you realize that it's definitely a possibility, and you're taking the right steps towards it. So we'll be rooting for you, that's for sure.
It is. Thanks, dude. Good luck with your stuff.
Cheers, man. Appreciate it.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!